So this is kind of relatively new stuff and work very much in progress and evolving. So it's going to be really informal and I haven't prepared any notes or nothing. And also, so the conceptual ideas are there, but really doing anything with them, this, well, I don't have yet. And so maybe one of you can say something about it or has some ideas on how to get something, say, quantitative and something new. So the topic is kind of a new point of view on Bell's theorem. And this new point of view is based on Bayesian networks. Which are kind of a mathematical framework to encode causality relations between random variables. And so basically, what one can achieve in this point of view is that the basic idea is to replace the assumption, this mysterious free will in Bell's theorem, that Alice and Bob, they have to choose their settings. And so they have several measurements available, right? And in each run of the experiment, they kind of randomly have to choose one of them. And so there's a lot of philosophical discussion about that and what that means, and if free will exists and whatnot. And so basically, what I'm trying to say is that one can replace this assumption of free will by an assumption of independence of sources, which is conceptually clearer and in the end more or less, well, for the usual Bell scenario is essentially equivalent. But in addition to that, it allows completely new scenarios which one cannot formulate in usual language, and therefore also completely new kinds of, well, non-locality. So then I would like to start by kind of recalling Bell's theorem, and in a kind of so this is going to be kind of a space-time diagram with space on the horizontal axis and time on the vertical axis. And so now the scenario is this. I assume you all know it, but so that there is a source of some kind of entangled quantum states where one part of the state goes to Alice and one part of the state goes to Bob. And so we have Alice on the left here. This is kind of Alice's world line. And this is kind of Bob's world line. And so Alice conducts a measurement on that particle and she gets an outcome A. Bob conducts a measurement and he gets an outcome B. And which measurement Alice conducts depends, well, or is basically encoded in X, which is her choice of measurement or her setting, her measurement setting. So this we can also draw in order to kind of, okay, so what I want to say by this diagram is that the outcome A depends on the choice of setting X and on this state, which she gets. And similarly for Bob, that his outcome B depends on the setting Y and the state that he gets. Now, when we look at, let's consider the case of local realistic theories in which this kind of setup or the correlations they get would be described by a classical hidden variable, lambda. So this is a random variable. And then
we can use
the button.
Oh yeah, sure. Thanks. And we got a certain probability distribution over all these five variables. So now how does that look like? Let me write it like this. So as I just said, the outcome of L is A depends only on X and on lambda. So this we can write as the probability of getting this certain outcome A, given that the setting was X and the hidden variable was lambda. Now we have to do the same thing for Bob's outcome B, and we'll get a factor of B given Y and lambda. And so this is kind of, so this would be the probability of getting the outcome A, the outcome A's and B, given that we have X, lambda, and Y fixed. But now we kind of need to also take the probabilities of X, Y, and lambda into account, which means that we need to multiply by the distribution, the joint distribution of X, Y, and lambda. But now, well, because of this free will thing, free will means that X and Y do not depend on the variable lambda. This is this so-called lambda independence. And additionally, X and Y are independent. So free will is saying that Alice and Bob can create randomness, can create random settings X, which are not correlated with anything else in the universe, or at least not correlated with anything else in any other one of these variables. So this means we need to multiply additionally by so the joint distribution of these three variables, which factors into the product of single variable distributions. Okay, and so what one usually considers, no, sorry, I mean, what we measure are of course not these five variables, because we don't have access to the hidden variable, because, well, by definition, it's supposed to be a hidden variable, and so we only actually measure A, B, X, and Y. So this is the experimentally accessible distribution, which means now, which we obtain from this five variable one just by taking the marginal with respect to the hidden variable lambda. So we just integrate it out. And, well, yeah. And this gives us then the standard formula for the correlations one obtains in a local realistic model or in a hidden variable model. Yes. So now the main the idea is, how do we generate randomness? For how do we generate this free will? And kind of an obvious idea. Yeah?
I just have a question about it too. I mean, Bell's theorem was proved and spoken about for several decades before this issue of free will was raised. So is the claim that everybody was mistaken in thinking that they understood the implications of Bell's theorem? Or, I mean, why is it not enough just simply to have some, see, the past notion of independence of the settings of X and Y by Bob and Alice? Why is it not sufficient just to have an intuitive notion that Bob and Alice set their set and make their settings independently. I mean, there's some crazy loophole if you know that you can invent if there's some conspiracy, but it doesn't seem to have affected anybody's evaluation of Bell's theorem before these issues were raised.
Yeah, that may well be. I'm not really familiar with all the historical things, but in any case, I'm going to present a kind of formulation which in my opinion is more natural and conceptually clearer and in a sense unifies, which just doesn't need any choice of settings for the observers, and just I find it kind of...
So you have something new?
Yeah.
Which is great, okay.
Well, so now, how would Alice and Bob generate this randomness they need in order to decide their setting? In each round, they need to decide this independently. And so, in practice, I'm not sure how it works in practice, actually, I'd be interested to know. But the most obvious thing would be to measure a quantum system. No, this is how one generates randomness, and as far as we know, the randomness which gets generated when measuring a quantum system is independent of everything else. So, this is why I would like to propose or kind of replace this scenario by something slightly different, yeah?
Well, it's independent of everything else if we don't have any hidden variable theory, right? I mean, if we have a hidden variable theory, then it's certainly deterministic, I think, and then...
Well, that may be, but those kind of hidden variable theories you cannot exclude by Bell's theorem. So the one we exclude using Bell's theorem are the ones where lambda does not determine x and y.
No, I mean those quantum systems which you're trying to produce, just, I mean, any random measure. I mean, you want to have a random system which gives you a random result, but that itself is not random if we have hidden variables, right?
I think the question, if they can clarify, is that rather than considering hidden variables for those two measurements you're considering,
yeah,
here A and B, rather if you say the choice of setting is going to be made by another quantum measurement,
yeah,
then you could talk about hidden variables of that system.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going to do.
So you are going to talk about, okay.
Yeah. So instead of having this kind of setting here, which comes out of nothing, let's consider another source here of entanglement or of hidden variables, or in general, just a source of randomness. And so this is the original one, which we also had in the previous case. And now I'm going to put another source here, and similarly a source for Bob. And so now these sources, actually I'm going to switch to straight arrows here also. So each source, again, now sends out a pair of particles. And in this scenario, we actually have four observers in a certain sense. So the idea is to, as I said, replace this setting by an additional source. But since the source can in principle be quantum, we cannot take it as a measurable variable, as a measurable quantity in the sense that we should also consider it as a source on the same footing or on the same level as this one, conceptually. So that this also sends out a pair of particles, and what previously was the measurement, the choice of setting determined or made up by Alice herself, now becomes an additional measurement by another observer. And we can kind of go back and forth between these models. So between hidden variable models in this picture, two hidden variable models in this picture, and back. So firstly, I suppose I should explain what I mean by a hidden variable model in this picture. So in this case, each source would be described by a hidden variable. So I'm going to call this one mu A, and this one mu B. And now, can again write down a joint distribution for all the relevant random variables. So, because, okay, we're talking about hidden variable models, so these are all classical random variables. And we can write down a joint distribution for these seven variables. I'm not going to do this because, well, it would be a pretty long expression. But I hope that the idea is clear how it should look like, no? That, so kind of the arrows indicate which variable depends on which ones, right? So A should only depend on mu A and lambda and kind of be independent of everything else. So in this way, we would get a similar, an expression similar to this one. And then again, we can take the marginal distribution of X, A, B, and Y, which are the measurable quantities. And we would end up with kind of, well, an expression for this churn distribution, which is the measurable one.
And you have P of mu, P of lambda, or P of mu A, P of lambda, P of mu A being product or something?
Yes, exactly. So this is the crucial assumption, which is analogous what corresponds to the free will in the previous case. So previously here, we had been saying that this X and Y is independent of everything else, so that these three, the joint distribution of these three variables factors into the product. And so here, now we should make the same assumption that the joint distribution of these three variables is a product, that these three sources are independent. And well, in practice, I suppose that these would be really spatially separated and located in with a certain distance. And then I think this is a very reasonable assumption, because if you repeat the experiment many times and you would have kind of correlations between these sources which sustain themselves over many runs of the experiment, correlations over a large distance, that would be quite absurd. I think so. So any, let's say, non-absurd local realistic theory would satisfy this independence of sources assumption. That what we have to write there at the end is a joint distribution of hidden variables which factors P of mu A times P of lambda times P of mu B. Well,
So it seems to me whether there ought to be correlation between those three variables or not depends to some extent on what they're describing. So if instead of letting the setting be determined by the free will of the experimenter, instead you took some complicated function of the voltage on some line multiplied by the temperature, you know, so just something where you think it's totally implausible that this crazy complicated function would have anything to do with what's at the other end, then you could sort of justify what you're saying about the implausibility of correlation. But so far, you haven't told us what those variables represent. So why shouldn't they be correlated?
Well, that will depend on the concrete situation. But basically, the reasoning is exactly the same as here. How are you, in an actual experiment, how do you get this randomness of x and y? And how do you guarantee that it's not correlated with this hidden arrival sitting there? So yeah, I don't really know what to answer besides pointing out that it's just the same situation phrased, the same assumption phrased a little bit differently. Yeah, I should point out that something similar to this has actually been considered before in a so-called bilocality scenario. So this was in a paper of Ossiad. She's and Pironio, 2010. So they have been considering this scenario. Now again, same kind of space-time diagram, where they have two sources, and there is one observer in the middle, which receives one particle from each source. And then there's Alice and Charlie on the sides, which have a choice of setting. But the one in the middle has no choice of setting. The one in the middle always applies the same measurement. So this, yeah, okay. I'm not going to name the rivals now. So this was their bilocality scenario, and they also then considered the assumption of independence of sources. So this is kind of the hybrid model between the two. And so here one can kind of, the intuition is the following, that in the quantum case, one can use here, well, entangled states. And then this guy in the middle can apply a measurement in a Bell basis. So that what happens is essentially entanglement swapping. So that he generates then an effective, well, entangled state between Alice and Charlie, and they apply the usual, then so that they end up in a usual Bell scenario. Now, of course, to this, we can apply the same idea and replace the free will by introducing, again, additional sources in order to obtain a scenario which is, in my opinion, conceptually clearer because there is no distinction between sources and free will. Now, well, this kind of may suggest that one can come up with many different scenarios based on a kind of graph or based on some kind of causality structure which one assumes. So this is what I would like to explain now. And this is how one can obtain new kinds of non-locality and new scenarios which one cannot formulate in the usual framework. And this is based on Bayesian networks. Basically, Bayesian networks provide kind of the mathematical framework for this kind of causality scenarios. And the local the hidden arrival models in these scenarios. So now I'm going to define what a Bayesian network is. And I will start by defining such a causality structure. And that is given in terms of what mathematicians can call it DHG, directed acyclic graph. Which is a graph G consisting of a set of vertices V and a set of edges E, so that an edge E is a pair of vertices V1 and V2, which represents an arrow pointing from V1 to V2. And acyclic means that, so this is a directed graph, and acyclic means that it's a graph which doesn't have any oriented cycles, or, well, which means that when we can never start at some vertex and follow the arrows and end up at the same vertex. This would be kind of a causal loop, and this we do not want to allow, so this is what acyclic means. This is the causal structure of a Bayesian network is the DHG. Yeah, I think I'm not going to write this down in detail now, but so a Bayesian network consists of a DHG representing the causal structure plus a specification of conditional probabilities as follows. That for each vertex, by the way, now so far we're not distinguishing between sources and measurements. So far, both of them are vertices. So these conditional probabilities are for every vertex, we have a probability distribution on the variable kind of which corresponds to that vertex, conditional on or depending on all its ancestors, where the ancestors are just all the other vertices which have an arrow to that vertex. Okay, so in this case we have A here, and well, this is precisely what I said before, that A, the distribution of A is kind of conditional or depends on mu A and lambda, but not on anything else. And then, for example, for lambda, well, lambda doesn't have any ancestors, which means that for lambda, we just have given a probability distribution over its values. Okay, so if we have all this data, so for each vertex, we have such a conditional distribution. When we multiply all these, we get the joint distribution kind of all these variables represented by the vertices. And this is a joint distribution represented by this Bayesian network. So the Bayesian network corresponds to the graph plus these conditional probabilities, and that defines a joint distribution for all these variables just by multiplying together all these conditional probabilities. And this is exactly what happens in these examples. So not only here, but also already in an ordinary Bell scenario, that this joint distribution is just corresponds to the Bayesian network given by this graph, plus these conditional probabilities which define the hidden variable theory. All right, and now we have two classes of vertices, right? And when we apply this to no locality scenarios, we have two classes of vertices. We have the sources, which we assume not to be accessible because they're hidden arrivals in the local realistic models, and measurements or observers. And again, now in this case, there's no choice of measurement. All observers in every run of the experiment, the observers always apply the same measurement. So there's only one a single arrival associated to that. And in the local realistic models, these are precisely those which one can obtain from a Bayesian network when taking the marginals over to the arrivals, like here. Is that clear? I hope that's, well, probably haven't explained it very well, but so this is the basic idea. And now one can consider much more general stuff than this or this. And there's one example which I find particularly nice because of its high degree of symmetry, which I would like to explain now. So in this example, this I can unfortunately not draw as a space-time diagram, so I'm just going to draw it kind of a scene from only the spatial part. Yeah?
I have one question on the general framework. When you come to apply this in a practical case, how will you know which arrows to draw and which not to draw? Presumably they'll be within the light cone or something.
Yes,
what
yes,
prevents
yes.
you from drawing every arrow that's possible with, you know, subject to being within the light cone?
Yeah, yeah. In general, I suppose one should include all the arrows which are inside the light cone. But I guess it depends on what one wants to achieve in the experiment, no? What kind of fit and arrival theories one wants to refute. Depending on that, you should choose the arrows accordingly and the graph accordingly.
Right, if you have a particular particular model in mind, hidden variable model.
No,
if
I don't.
You're trying to build rule out all of them or something, you deal with all of them together, won't you need to draw all the arrows?
Yes. I guess so. If you would, for example, well, all of them, would that include all of those which also have superluminal signaling?
No, well, perhaps not, because I mean, you might want a general.
If you would try to do that, then you would have to include, basically, you would get, well, an essentially complete graph, and then, or at least, then you would not be able to get any kind of non-locality or refute any local realistic theories, because then you can always find a local realistic model which explains your correlations. Or so whenever you have one vertex, which is the source, and has arrows or paths, directed paths to any other vertex, then you will always be able to find the hidden arrival model.
Yeah, well, you might, because you took it to be a directed graph,
yeah.
You might want to correlate the direction with the underlying causal structure of the space-time.
Yes,
but,
sure, sure.
But then
yes.
Beyond that, it's not clear whether there's any...
Yes, but I'm not really concerned with that part, so I'm just assuming that I have the graph given, and if someone comes up with a hidden arrival theory, then that person has to tell me what the causal structure is.
I'm wondering if I should think of your diagram as sort of a possible model of what's physically going on. So what I have in mind is the fact that in a given physical scenario, it could be that there's a direct causal link from X to A, right? The choice of setting to, you know, the outcome of measurement. But of course, any such model could always be simulated by one wherein all the information about the setting and the outcome is in
exactly,
the variable. So you're basically assuming that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, or so this is the correspondence between the two formulations. I mean, not any hidden variable model in this scenario has to be of that form, of course.
Right.
But this is how you can simulate these two scenarios, one with the other.
Is there always a way, given a Bayesian network, to design an experiment that will, in which the hidden variable correlations are characterized by probability distributions of the appropriate structure?
What do you mean by the appropriate
structure? Like if I just, well, like there's a Bayesian network associated to these space-time diagrams that you've drawn, but can you always go the other way? Like given a Bayesian network, can you always actually draw the appropriate experiment?
That's a very difficult question. I'm actually going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is now what this is basically the example. So let's consider three observers now. Three different measurements. Previously, in the usual Bell scenario here, we had four, or in this new formulation, we have four. But this, using this causal structure, using this graph, one only needs three. So these are going to be outcomes A, B, C. And I'm going to assume one source between each pair of observers, which means, so I'm placing a source here, and this may send out in the quantum case entangled particles to A and B, this one between B and C, and this one between A and C. So that what one is going to measure in the end is a joint three variable distribution, P, A, B, C, right? And now the question is, under which conditions, or given such a distribution, is it compatible with a Bayesian network of this form? Bayesian network, using classical random variables of this form. That would be a local realistic model in this scenario, using the independence of sources assumption. And it turns out that this is a problem which mathematicians have studied in a quite different context. And there are some conditions known for this kind of scenario. And the context in which they have studied this is exactly what Patrick was asking. The given a joint distribution for three variables, to try to decide if these three variables have a common cause. So a common cause really would be a variable which is correlated with all three of them, which determines the values of all three of them, in the sense of, in this picture, a source which sends out one particle to each. So what one could imagine, for example, I haven't really found a better example where one could apply this. But for example, imagine that we study languages and the history of languages, and we have three languages, and we want to know if these three languages had a common ancestor. And this is the kind of question one can approach in this. Because if they would not have a common ancestor, that means that, they could only have pairwise, or at most each pair of them could have a common ancestor. And which would give rise to a DHT exactly like this. So now the question is, given a free variable distribution, how can we decide whether one can obtain it from a Bayesian network on this graph? And this seems to be a quite difficult problem. And so, well, there's one inequality, one condition known due precisely to these people, Steudel and Nihat I from 2010. And this is an inequality in terms of the entropies and says that in such a case, well, okay, that, yeah. This is just a particular case of the result. And it says that if it is consistent, well, in any such Bayesian network, the joint entropy of all three variables is greater than or equal to 1/2 times the sum of the single variable entropies. So, for example, if this observation, this joint distribution, were such that each variable is random, for example, just like a binary coin flip, and such that these three variables are perfectly correlated, so that A always equal to B and always equal to C, this seems like it should not be possible, that one should not be possible to obtain it from a directed graph of this form. No? And this one can precisely detect using this inequality. Because in that case, well, the three single variable entropies are equal. So then we would have here 3/2 times the entropy of one of them, say A. But this joint entropy, because they are perfectly correlated, would also just be the entropy of one of them. Because if I know the value of A, I also know the value of B and the value of C. In this case, the inequality is violated. And this violation witnesses that perfect correlation and randomness is not compatible with a network topology of this form. So, yeah?
Is this the Boltzmann type entropy, the P log P entropy? Or does it matter which?
Oh, sorry, I should have said this is Shannon entropy. Yeah.
I had another question. All the examples you showed us so far, they're just sort of two layers.
Yes.
But what if you have more layers? Which are the output? Do you designate which are the outputs?
I thought about that, but so far I don't have any examples of physically sensible graphs. So all the physically sensible examples I have so far are just two layers, a lower layer of sources and an upper layer of measurements. But maybe one can do more general things, I don't know. Rob?
So given that an assumption of local causality would permit the causal network wherein there was a single cause for all these, do you have an idea of what sort of physical motivation would lead you to consider these kinds of causal networks as constraining the kinds of correlations you might observe?
Well, so this is kind of model one would expect precisely if we have three distant observers, no? And one physical source between each pair of them. So that this would be an actual representation of the experimental setup.
You could impose it by locality if the sources were sufficiently far away. So the source between A and C was sort of down that way, so further away from the top. So the source between A and C.
Yeah.
Was, you could make it so far, too far away
from
to the signaling to do that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. This one can always achieve.
You could just literally take it to be a triangle, like an equilateral triangle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
make it such that the...
Yeah, exactly. But the problem in this scenario is that I don't yet have any quantum violations. So now, when we look at the quantum case, we allow entangled sources of entangled particle pairs here. And in general, we can also allow these observers to make, well, they receive two quantum particles, so they can apply any kind of quantum measurement, entangled or not, having any number of outcomes. And so we've been doing some numerics in order to, on this, using quantum states and measurements in order to try and violate this inequality. But this, unfortunately, we haven't found anything, so it may well be that there are no quantum violations in that case. And now
did
I found...
You say this was a necessary and sufficient?
No.
Just necessary?
No, I assume that this is a very weak condition.
So there might be a stronger one.
Because, yes, and actually, I found one. I found another inequality, which is now not in terms of entropies, because entropies are quite coarse and a quantity. So there should be something finer. And I found one inequality saying that, which looks like this. Okay, let me erase. Times the probability that A equals B plus the probability that A equals C. This is less than or equal to 1. So the idea is as follows, that forget about the inequality now, but imagine that you would observe A and B to be perfectly correlated. Given, assuming this network topology, this would mean that A could not depend on this hidden variable, right? Because if it would, then this would not allow a perfect correlation between A and B, because B does not depend on this one. So, and given that A does not depend on this variable, this implies that A and C have to be independent, because this is the only way that correlations between A and C can occur. Which is now actually another proof that having randomness and perfect correlation between A, B, and C is impossible. And if one can make this argument quantitative, and this seems to be the inequality one gets. That if we have perfect correlation between A and B, then this is 1. And then we get an upper bound on the correlation between A and C.
So what does it say, PC?
So this is max of over C of P of C, so the...
Just P of C.
Yes.
So it looks like a plus there.
Yeah.
Where?
C. Just some leftover.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks. So this is the probability, the most likely outcome of C. Now the next problem is going to be to look for quantum violations of this inequality. And one can generalize this to n observers and having between each pair of observers one source, so between each k observers one source, and do all sorts of other stuff. But in general, it seems very difficult to find conditions which need to be satisfied. To find necessary conditions for a joint outcome distribution to be compatible with a given network topology.
But why can't we use sort of linear programming techniques?
It's nonlinear.
It's nonlinear?
Yes. Every inequality, whenever you want to... Okay. Let's consider linear inequalities. Whenever we have a linear inequality, and we assume it to hold, whenever in all the local realistic models, then this inequality cannot witness any non-locality.
Cannot witness any non-locality
because all the deterministic models one can have, so all the deterministic models have hidden variable descriptions, right? But, well, any distribution is a convex combination of the of deterministic ones. So with a linear inequality, you will not be able to detect any violations. And if you compare this to standard Bell inequalities, the Bell inequality is a linear inequality. Now, again, back in the usual scenario of conditional, it's a linear combination of conditional probabilities, right? But now, in my formalism, I need to express this in terms of the joint distribution of all four variables. And if I do that, then it becomes nonlinear. So Bell inequalities, which are linear in the usual formulation, become nonlinear in this formalism.
It's a fairly mild sort of nonlinearity in the sense
that. That could be, yeah.
It becomes less mild for some reason.
No, I don't know. Maybe one can also find, well, better behaved inequalities for this case, but I just haven't found any. And don't even know how to approach the problem, really. Well, yeah, that's essentially all I wanted to say and all I can say.